Hey, first we should welcome the Kodesh Tov. Tell you a split speaker this morning. Not only what is ready for me to put the arts, but we teach a little bit of Torah Eretz Yisrael, and certainly Torah that's relevant to our time. And as you see, we're going to be dealing with the Yilam Hazer. Okay, I also want to thank the entire Rabbi community, and Deborah in particular, for reaching us for those my budgetary classes when I was there. I'm glad it worked out. And Matt, I look forward.
Yes.
That was all just introduction. We're now about to learn together. As you see, we're going to be addressing the characters, the secondary characters for Megillat Esther. Okay, can people hear?
No.
Is this okay?
No.
Okay, how's this? So we're going to be addressing the role of the secondary characters in Megillat Esther. What's interesting about Megillat Esther is that there are many ways of approaching the Megillah. Many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the satirical approach to the Megillah and the historical approach to the Megillah. And one of the other aspects is certainly the numerous characters that appear throughout the Megillat Esther. And as we know, the heroes of the story, certainly Mordechai and Esther, don't appear alone. As a matter of fact, there's really only one scene where we find them more or less talking and conversing well with the other. We're going to deal with that scene as well. But we're going to try to see the development of the secondary characters too. Uriel Simon and other biblical scholars point out that the role of secondary characters in stories, and in Tanakh this is no exception, the role is to, on one hand, help in plot development, in addition to try to show character development, and certainly to advance and perhaps even enhance the role that the primary characters play. Although the primary... A little like this.
Now what? Can you hear me like this?
No.
Okay. What we're going to see then is that although the primary characters are the ones that are in the spotlight, they're the ones of whom we're going to see a tremendous amount of character development, the secondary characters also play a role in firstly developing the plot, but secondly enhancing the role of these primary characters. So we're going to begin, as you see on the pages before you, with the female protagonists of our story, trying to see how they, although as secondary characters, play significant roles throughout the Megillah. We begin then with the character of Vashti. And as we're going to see, Vashti is not merely a character that serves as an independent character. She clearly does not play a primary, but rather a secondary role in the Megillah. And she is not only going to present herself as a foil for other characters, but also to enhance, as we mentioned, the role of the heroine of the story, of Esther. Let's begin with Vashti. As we see, she is going to arrange for a parallel party to her husband. Vashtiyat hadat enonesh. What already is interesting is that we see that at her husband's party, there is no rule. There's no rule of how much you drink and how much you don't drink. There isn't any enforcement of any type. Hashliyat hadat inonis, kichen yisah hamelech al korad beito, lasot keton ish va'ish. Everyone can do as they choose. And if you look carefully at Vashti's name, which ironically is composed of the same letters of the word mishke, Vashti and mishke, here we find the dramatic irony. When it comes to the party of Ahasuerus and the party goers of Ahasuerus, there aren't any rules. When it comes to Vashti now, we're going to see that there is indeed a rule. Gam Vashti Hamalkah Asta Mishte Nashim Beit Hamalchut Asher LaMelech Ahasuerus. Bayom Hashvi'i Katov LeKonelech Bayayin Amar Lemu Man Bista Harbona Bista Bavata Zekar Bacharkas Shevat Hasharisim Hamashartim Et Pnei Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus decides, through his advisors, to invite Vashti, lahabiyat Vashti hamakal l'pnei hamalach b'keta mahut, laharot hami basarim et yofya ki tovat marehi. Here we find that Vashti is going to be invited upon the king's command to this party, to appear before all of his partygoers, all of the officers, and it's clear what his motive is, to display Vashti's beauty in front of all. And now we have to ask, why does Vashti respond as follows? Vatima'ena ha-malka Vashti. For the first time, the word Malka precedes her name Vashti. By virtue of the fact that she is the queen, she now refuses lavo b'dvar ha-melech asher b'yad ha-sharisim v'yitzo ha-melech ma'od v'chamato v'arabo. Vashti refuses to appear before the king Ahasuerus, and as a result, he doesn't simply get angry. He gets very angry, he enters a rage, and the rage apparently does not subside. And we have to ask ourselves, if Vashti refuses, and apparently, although the author does not make it clear, Vashti seems to refuse because she feels somewhat humiliated. Her husband has invited her to appear in the midst of her own party, in front of his party, to show off her beauty, her physical status. Here we see not only Ahasuerus' character, which Vashti is meant to highlight, to enhance. Ahasuerus is someone who sees women as objects, and this is going to continue in the next scene, in the beauty contest scene. And it seems that even Esther HaMalkah will not change the king's perception of women. In addition to this character enhancement, we also find that Vashti perhaps does not anticipate her husband's response. For if she did, what would be her motivation in refusing to appear before the king? Even her own pride should not come in the way of her survival. Apparently, Vashti did not anticipate her husband's response. Vashti, knowing that her husband was in the midst of a party, was in the midst of drinking, probably anticipated that he would recover and after his hangover he would be fine. Vashti probably anticipated that this would be a short-lived rage and everything would be okay thereafter. What we already see then from the character of Vashti is that when Ahasuerus enters an intoxicated state, he generally becomes involved not only in national affairs, in showing off his wife in front of different nations, but will also become very personally enraged dealing with his wife, and will become so angry that he'll be willing to listen to his advisors, as we're going to see, and will even kill her. Vayomar ha-melech l'chachamim yodei ha-itim, ki chayim dvar ha-melech l'fnei kol yodei da-padim. The king, prior to deciding, based on his mood, what to do, will always consult with his closest advisors. V'hakar robilav, and the closest ones, karchanach shetarach matah tarshish meres marzunah l'muchan, shevat sarei parach ha-madai robet ni ha-melech ha-yoshvim yishonah l'machut, kadat ma la'asot b'malka Vashti, al asher lo asta et ma'amar ha-melech Ahasuerus b'yad ha-sarisim. What should be done? He is not going to let this matter pass by without punishment. V'yamar m'muchan l'fnei ha-melech ha-sarim, lo al ha-melech l'vado asta Vashti ha-malka, ki ha-kol ha-sarim. He takes a personal affair, and he transforms it into a national one. For after all, Vashti is now going to serve as a precedent for all the women of the land, and no man will be respected anymore by his wife. And therefore, not only must she be executed, but letters must go out pronouncing and demanding that respect be paid as the man Liot Kol Ish Sorer Beito on the Daber Kishon Hamo. What we find then is Vashti's role, which is certainly necessary in the plot. She firstly serves as a mode of foreshadowing, as a means for us as the readers to anticipate somewhat of what's going to come thereafter. And therefore, when we see Esther, who appears before the king and asks for a meshteh, asks for a party, and asks for a party with a private audience of Ahasuerus herself and Haman, we already have a sense of what her motive is. Because without this story, we wouldn't understand why Esther asked apparently such a ridiculous request. What Esther knows is that in order to execute one, in order to arouse the king's anger sufficiently to ensure that he will express his wrath towards another, She must firstly create a similar scenario as we found in the Vashti story. She has to make sure that the king will be intoxicated. She has to make sure that he'll be drunk. She also has to make sure that his suspicion is aroused sufficiently so that there'll be some personal anger involved, an anger involving his wife. And therefore, she is going to plant within Ahasuerus's mind a suspicion that there must be some involvement between Esther and Haman. In addition, there is always the political factor that is going to play a role as well. And therefore, she tries to create some type of suspicion, perhaps, with inviting only Haman as his closest advisor. Advisors, as we know, that could perhaps, as we're going to see in the next case, in Bigtan and Teresh, also try to usurp the throne, but that's not enough. Esther is going to provide the scene based on this Vashti story. But there are many factors that aren't going to be taken care of and are completely outside of Esther's control. And that is namely having the proper advisors there as well. Sure enough, upon the second party, when there is sufficient political background and certainly personal suspicion, after Ahasuerus notices that Haman is around in the middle of the night in his private chambers, only at that point is Esther ready, in the king's state of intoxication, to accuse Haman. And beyond just accusing Haman, when the king, after being told by his psychologist to go out and to calm down in a state of rage, he comes in only to find Haman nofel al pnei Esther hagam lachosha et ishti im yibabayit. Do you also want, on a personal level, to usurp the throne by taking my wife? And this, as we know, is a factor beyond Esther's control, one that only Hashem behind the scenes can take care of. Here we see, then, Vashti's role in plot development. But what we're going to find through the comparisons between Vashti and Esther is that Vashti also plays a role in helping to highlight the role of the primary character, namely Esther. Let's take a look at Esther and see how the author clearly tries to draw parallels but also differences between these two characters. Vayhi amrina tevasa, hi Esther batado, ke'en ma'avaim, v'na'ara yifat tovar, v'tovat mareh. Already we see a parallel that the author is clearly trying to draw between Esther and Vashti in Pasuk Yud Aleph of Perek Aleph. These are the only two characters throughout the Megillah who are both described as Tovat Mareh, as beautiful characters. These are both beautiful queens, and Esther, similar to Vashti, will have a party made in her honor, and similar to Vashti, will also have an audience with the king. But what we see is that there clearly are differences between them as well. On one hand, Vashti is going to highlight Ahasuerus' character, highlight a man who sees a woman as an object, highlight the helplessness of the kingdom, highlight the fact that he can't even enforce a will over his own wife. Esther, similarly, will highlight Ahasuerus' character also as a helpless man, as one who is going to, in the end, follow the will of his wife. But here, the similarities end. What we find is that Vashti is invited by the king, or really commanded by the king to appear, and she refuses. Esther is not invited to appear before the king. As a matter of fact, is going to go against the will of the king, going to disobey the command of the king by appearing before him. Vashti, who in the end will be executed because she doesn't listen to the will of the king, Esther, who fears execution, will appear before the king and have all of her prayers answered. What we find is that the author is clearly trying not only to draw the parallels, as we mentioned, but also show that Esther serves as the foil for Vashti. And the question is, what are the motives involved? Note that the author doesn't really tell us why Vashti doesn't appear before the king, but we know clearly why Esther does. Esther does not appear for selfish reasons. As a matter of fact, for the most unselfish of reasons. She puts her life at risk for the sake of her nation. V'kasher abadati abadati. And here we find that Esther, as opposed to Vashti, is a character who is willing to put her personal motives and even personal pride, personal survival aside for the sake of the nation. And so the author clearly tries to draw the parallels and at the same time to contrast these two characters, showing how Vashti as a secondary character certainly highlights the primary role of Esther HaMelkah. Vashti, who is somewhat enigmatic, and we don't know much about her, is that the way that an author is going to tell us to distance ourselves from her. Don't get to know her too much. She may not be the villain as we always present her as in King's Garden plays, but she certainly is no heroine, as opposed to Esther, whose character is highlighted by virtue of her mission, knowing that her courage and her calculations and appearing before the king against his command are ultimately what are going to catalyze the salvation for the Yehudim living in Shushan. With this, we now turn to the next of our secondary characters, namely Zeresh. Zeresh, who appears in two very short scenes in the Megillah, who is also going to, on one hand, serve as a foil, and that's why, as I mentioned in the title, they're really partners in crime. And what I hope that you'll begin to see throughout the shiur is that the author doesn't merely present one character foil, but rather, whenever there's a foil, there are generally two characters who are going to serve similar roles, but at the same time, perhaps, with different circumstances. Zeresh here, on one hand, is going to be very similar to Vashti. On the other hand, she is also Vashti's foil. Together, they are going to serve to enhance the character of Esther the heroine. Let's take a look at Zeresh's two scenes. Vayitapek haman vayavol beito, vayishlach vayaveya tohava v'Zeresh ishto. As Haman is invited to the first party of Esther, he comes home to his ohavim, who in Tanakh are basically his loyal servants, and included within his loyal followers is none other than Zeresh ishto. This is the author's way of already presenting Zeresh as one of the primary supporters of her husband. She is loyal to her husband. And one cannot ignore the difference then between Zeresh and Vashti. Zeresh is going to stand behind her husband. Zeresh, as a matter of fact, will be as involved as possible in promoting her husband. Here the author wants you to see Zeresh, namely, the wife of Haman, is very similar to Vashti, the wife of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus, who also made a party, laharot et osher kvod malchuto, but only to have that dismissed by his wife. In the case of Haman, when he comes to show up, his wealth and his pride, his wife is extremely supportive. And kol asher gidlo hamelach, v'et asher nisoa hasarim v'avdei hamelach. Here note how he is also going to consult. He is going to consult with his advisors, of whom Zeresh is also included. And similar to Ahasuerus, who consults when he's disobeyed, we're going to find that Haman will consult because he feels that he's been disobeyed. The God calls the Enenu Shaveli B'chol Eitz Asher Mi Roed Mordechai HaYudi Yoshei B'Shar HaMelech. As long as Mordechai is there and is not bowing down to me, I feel disobeyed. What do you have to say? Notice that the closest advisor to him is none other than his wife, Zeresh, who answers, Yasu eitz kaboha chamishim haman, ubabokher amor lamalach vayitlu et Mordechai alav, obohum amalach ala mishneh salmeach vayitav adabar lakmi hamalach vayar haetz. As opposed to Vashti, who does not wish for her husband to enjoy his mishneh, who is going to deprive her husband of the pleasure of seeing her in front of all the noblemen, Zeresh wants her husband to enjoy the mishneh hamalach. Zeresh wants Haman to have a good time at the party, and therefore she'll go out of her way to ensure that Haman will be in a better mood by placing Mordechai in a situation wherein he'll finally be yet no longer be a nemesis to Haman. Ironically, by doing so, by helping her husband, she's going to catalyze his downfall. And here we have to ask as well, what went wrong with the plan? What did Zeresh ultimately do? How could she not have anticipated Ahasuerus's response? And this is the author's way of creating a parallel between these two disparate secondary characters of Vashti and Zeresh. Both of them had the same tragic flaw. They both did not properly anticipate Ahasuerus's response. Ahasuerus, once he's in a state of intoxication, once he's angry for political and personal reasons, there is no salvation. By then, as long as there's an advisor around, that advisor will direct him in the area of execution. And here, sure enough, Zeresh, who as opposed to Esther, is not as calculated, is not as methodical, is not as patient. Maher, do this right away. And for that reason alone, Haman is found in the chambers of the king that very night, and that ultimately is what leads to his downfall. Let's take a look at Zeresh's second scene. Vayeshev Mordechai el shaar hamelech v'Haman nidchak b'beito achel chafui rosh. Here, in Esther, Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Bet, we find the post-Perek Vav scene of Alayla Hu Nagadash Nat Hamelech. Vayeshev Haman l'Zeresh ishto, so he's going to go to his primary advisor, his supporter. First, Ulechol ha'avam v'chol asher karavu, hoping to seek some solace in their words, Vayomu chachamah. But this time Zeresh takes backstage. She does not answer first. Only then Zeresh Ishto says with the Chachamim. The Chachamim, who are now wise sages and are no longer the faithful advocates of Haman. In me zera ha'yudim Mordechai, asher machilota lepol lefanav, lo tuchalo ki'im nachol tipol lefanav. Here we find one of the milim anchot, one of the repetitive leading words in the Megillah, that of Megillah, as opposed to Vayinasehu, as opposed to Haman's temporary success as he was elevated in the position of the court, here we're going to see that they all anticipate his immediate downfall. His downfall, firstly, before Mordechai, but really the downfall of everything that Haman represents. The downfall can have his position in front of Mordechai, the downfall of his morale after he has to lead Mordechai through the streets of Shushan, and ultimately his downfall in front of Esther, which the king is going to be witness to. And in the end, the only time he rises again is when he's 50 amot on top of the tree. Here we find again how Zeresh is going to highlight the primary characters, namely Esther. On one hand, she's the foil for Vashti, but really they're partners in crime. They are similar in that they don't anticipate Ahasuerus's response, something that Esther certainly takes into account. And perhaps Zeresh's role more than any other is ironically to serve to tell us the truth of knowing that the Yehudim are ultimately going to succeed. She is the character who highlights for us the difference between Persian culture, where everything is prophesied based on signs, where everything is foretold based on the constellations, without really understanding the power of the Yehudim. Here, this irrational fear of the Jews that she's going to express helps us understand the struggle between the forces of good and evil. The Rebach v'Hatzalah she'ya'amod mimakom macher, as Mordechai tells us there. Zeresh and Haman represent for us the foils for Mordechai and Esther, and that's why we find in Shoshanat Yaakov how these four characters are intentionally contrasted one against the other. Those who believe that fate is in the stars, as opposed to those who understand that Rebach v'Hatzalah ya'amod mimakom macher, understanding more without the relationship. Zeresh's role, in addition to highlighting Vashti's, is there to tell us the message that Esther represents. With this, we turn to perhaps the most famous dynamic duo in Megillat Esther, secondary characters, but as we're going to see, important nonetheless, And these are certainly none other than Bitan and Teresh. As we turn then to Esther Perovet, I have to tell you that the story bothers me year after year. Although, as we're going to explore right now, that these are secondary characters who clearly contribute to plot development, and as we see the Machloket and Masechet Megillah, wondering where to start the Megillah, in the end, we know, Rabbi Meir's opinion, we have to say the entire Megillah because of, from the very beginning, we must appreciate the development of the plot. Nonetheless, we're going to ask ourselves, why are Bitan and Teresh mentioned as such important characters? Could the Megillah have been said in perhaps a shorter way, and maybe even in Paragraph? Oh, by the way, Mordechai divulged to the king a plot against him. Firstly, Bitan and Teresh, help us, as we're going to see in these three psukim, help us in understanding a little bit of the plot development by Amim Ahim and Mordechai Yoshi Bishar HaMelech. Katzach Bitan and Teresh, Shnei Sarisei HaMelech, Mishomei Hatzach, וירשו לשלוח יד למלך אחשוורוש. וירדה הדבר למרדכי, ויגד לאסתר המלכה, ותאמר אסתר למלך בשם מרדכי. ויבקש הדבר, וימצא ויתוב שניהם על עץ, ויכתב בספר דברי הימים לפני המלך. Firstly, we find the role of foreshadowing. This way, the author tells you, when you reach Paragav and you find בלילה ההוא נדדה שנת המלך, that the king cannot fall asleep, and the sefer hazachronot will be open before him. And here's the story of Mordechai and Bitan and Teresh. You'll understand the background of the story, so there clearly is a literary role of foreshadowing. In addition, as I mentioned, the secondary characters will always contribute to plot development. What we already see is that whenever there's someone involved in any plot against the king, we find that indeed they're partners in crime. Don't think that anyone really stands alone. As we see, Vashti and Teresh, although somewhat different, play similar roles in the Megillat Esther. Bitan and Teresh are a double team, are a team that work together against the king. And therefore, do not think at the end that when Carbona mentions the idea of the tree, recognize that he has a partner as well. If Carbona knew about the tree, then apparently he must have been one of the Mohabim, a Haman, who was witness to Zeresh's advice. And therefore, the author is also hinting to the idea of these partners in crime. So when you see at the end all the different advisors that come into play, recognize that they also are working together. But then again, why Bitan and Teresh? As a matter of fact, what we find even in their names is something quite amusing. If you notice, the names Bitan and Teresh might even sound comical, are actually very similar. The Nun and the Vav, for example, by the way, it never appears as Bitan and separately Teresh. It's always Abed and Castello, right? It's always Bitan and Viteresh. The Nun and the Vav, which we know are supplements to Hebrew names, are very much parallel in the Hebrew language as a prefix and a suffix. Notice that Bitan and Teresh, the Taf and the Taf are parallel, and the Bet and the Shin versus the Gimel and the Resh. Right? If you see it in writing, notice that this is a very famous Chazal form of writing of what's called Atbash. And this is the author's way of really playing in a very pretty fashion, playing with their names. Who are Bitan and Teresh? I don't know. These are characters that the author is having a wonderful time with. These are characters who are really one and the same. Bitan and Teresh are the same type of character, and therefore they are extremely parallel. But the parallel goes beyond that. If you take a look at their names, you notice something else about their etymology. Let's start with Bitan. We know the name Bitan from Sefer Daniel Perek Aleph, also dealing with Persian society. Vayaman lahem hamelech dvar yom v'yamo mipat vav hamelech v'miyan. The children of the court, the Jewish children of the court, refused to eat the pat vav, which is understood as the bread of the king, in addition to drinking the wine of the king, lest it not be kosher. Pat vav then, and of Bitan, the vav, is the bread. Who is the big candidate? He is the Tsar HaOsim. And who is Teresh? Yelashon Tirosh. Tirosh Tanakh is one. Teresh is the Tsar HaMashkim. Reminds you of any story? Many of you are probably telling yourselves, of course there's a parallel here. Because we know that in the Gilam Hasfer, there are numerous intentional analogies with the Yosef story of Mitzrayim. Beyond the famous parallel of Mordechai, who was led through the streets with the Merkava and with the Bitei HaMelech, and the handing of a Kabat HaMelech, and the rise to power, what we know is that there's another parallel as well. The cause of Yosef's rise to power was because of two Sarisim, and not simply servants of the king, but specifically a Tsar HaMashkim and a Tsar HaOsim. So too, Mordechai's rise to power is also due to a Tsar HaMashkim and a Tsar HaOsim, none other than Bichan and Teresh. As we know, in these three psukim, though, there are even more parallels. The response of the king to hearing these words is a katzak Bichan v'Teresh mi'sarisei, and the katzak of Bichan v'Teresh, which is going to lead to their execution, is parallel to Breshit Perek Mem Vayitzo Paro al Shnei Sarisav, the katzak, the anger of both stories, and clearly the end of the book, Bichan and Teresh Vayitzo Shnehem al Kitz, similar to the fall, or the rise of the tree, of the Tsar HaOsim, the Tsar HaOsim Tala, Hasher Patar Lehem Yosef. Due to both the Tsar HaMashkim and the Tsar HaOsim, Yosef is going to rise to power just as Mordechai. And we see that Chazal are very aware of this parallel from the second Megillah that we give along with Bet, Yamim Ahen, or Mordechai Yoshe Bishar HaMelech, Katzak B'tan HaTeresh, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hektit HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Adon Al Abadah, La'asot Retzon Tzadik. Don't think that Hashem just did this in Mordechai's case. It's Hashem who is really playing the role here. Hashem is going to create a scenario wherein the master will be angry with his avadim in order to serve to benefit a tzaddik. Uman of Yosef, we find this by Yosef Shenemar. Visham Bitan Narivri, in the story of the Tsar HaMashkim, who suggests Yosef in front of Paro. These are Rabatim al-Adonayim la-Solta, Neshlot Tzaddik, Umanu Mordechai, and so too by Mordechai, the Tzeva, by Yvazadar, Adabar, the Mordechai. These, then, are two characters who are secondary characters who play firstly a role in plot development, but also a role in highlighting a primary character. And the primary character that the author, in a very subtle way, wants to place in the spotlight here is none other than the same character who doesn't seem to exist in the story of Yosef, but it's Yosef who says, May Hashem yatzah hadavar. The primary character here is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with three psukim alone, and by employing this pun, this play on words and their names, the author is telling you to not overlook these secondary characters. These partners in time highlight someone greater. They highlight Hashem's role in looking out for the tzaddik to ensure that he'll rise to power, so that as the plot unfolds, you'll understand who is really behind it all. With this, we now turn to another duo here, as we're going to see now the advisors of Ahasuerus. We begin with Menuchan. In Esther, Perek Aleph, Menuchan is one of the closest advisors of the king, the one whom the king consults to know what to do with regard to Vashti. ויאמר ממוכן לפני המלך הסבים, לא אנחנו בדור את הראשי המלכה, כי על כל הסבים, ועל כל העמים אשר בכל מדינת המלך החשבי ראש. ממוכן, who is clearly a wise political character, is going to transform a personal offense of Ashti into a national affair. Not only what Ashti did to you, but to all of the men. What Mimulchan clearly does is play on the mood of Ahasuerus. He takes advantage of Ahasuerus' tragic flaw, the flaw that Vashti and Zeresh did not take into account. The flaw of the king's anger is a result of intoxication and a personal and political offense. And what he's going to do in a ridiculous and extreme manner is playing so much with the mood of Ahasuerus that he's able to codify a ridiculous law, a law that is going to be sent to 127 lands, שכל איש יהיה סורר בביתו ומדבר לשון עמו, לך קיים הזה תאמר מה שרות פרס ומדי אשר שמעו את דבר המלכה לכל שרי המלך עובדי בדיון וכסף. And sure enough, Chazal understands who is this character. He is not only a secondary character, but once again serves to help in character and plot development, to help us understand, as mentioned in the beginning, that it's not enough for the king to get angry. What Esther knows is that she has to create a scenario when she invites him to a party. She has to create a scenario where the king will suspect a personal and political offense, but she has no control over the advisors. But there must be an advisor there, and there must be an advisor who, like Mimuchan, will act selfishly, will use his closeness with the king in a very personal way, to promote himself, to promote the cause of men over the women who may disobey them. And here we find Chazal tell us, this isn't an ordinary character. This character, the secondary character, of course, as a parallel. Of course, he is meant to highlight for us not only Mordechai, who is going to place the national affairs over the personal one. So who must this character be? Mubuhan, Tama Mubuhan, Zeh Haman. This is really Haman. V'lama nekra shemo Mubuhan, Shemuhan l'puramut. He is bringing, at the cost of everything else, to punish even those who aren't really deserving of punishment. Vashti, who we could think of probably a much better, and I would even say a more deserving form of punishment, is Mubuhan, who is ready to punish without cause. So to Haman, Chazal see, he is meant to serve as a parallel to Haman, who because Mordechai will not bow down to him, and in seeking to promote his own position, will place the entire Jewish nation in jeopardy. At the same time, Tosfot explains, Muhan yesh midrash shaya Daniel, that this is really Daniel, ולפי שהיה נשוי לסבית, שהייתה גדולה ממנו, שלא היה יכול לחופת דבר כלשונו יעץ לעשותים. החזל are telling us that this character of Mubuhan is indeed a very selfish character. Call him Daniel or call him whoever you want, but he is a character who is married to some type of noble woman, who apparently has greater power than he. What Chazal are noticing are once again his selfish motives. He serves to highlight the role of Mordechai, who is going to promote himself not for his own selfish means, not so that he cannot perhaps overpower his wife or the queen, but on the contrary, to assist his nation. And who is his partner in crime? As we're going to see now, the author is going to hint to Harbona. Harbona, who on one hand is Mubuhan's foil, is also his partner. As we've been seeing so far, each of the secondary characters has a partner who on one hand is different, but on the other hand is very similar. How is he different than Mubuhan? Mubuhan, who places the personal offense above the national, who places the national offense over the personal offense, Harbona is going to downplay the national role of Haman, knowing that Ahasuerus was also included in the participation of the plot against the Yehudim, and instead is going to highlight the personal offense of Haman. Esther Perak Aleph, Vayom Ashvihi Ketov Leich HaMelech Vayayim, Amar Mubuhan Bistach Harbona, Bittah Vavakta Vizaytar Vachata Shirat Kisawisim HaMesharetim Apein HaMelech HaChashveirosh. Harbona is one of the closest advisors of the king, and as such, he is there during this personal party of Esther, VaHamelech Shav Meninach HaBittah, and as Esther accused Haman, as being the one responsible for the destruction of her nation, the kingdom goes out to his courtyard only to return. ויאמר המלך הגם לכבוש את המלכה הגמי בבית הדבייתי מפני המלך ופני המן חפו. The king comes, and here beyond Esther's control is the perfect scenario. She has before her not only a political offense against Haman, but a personal one as well, reminding us of the Vashti story. Haman is falling on top of Esther, and at that point comes along Harbona. Eschanim ha-sarisim ufnei ha-melech gam! We're getting back to the political side. He may ha-eit asher asam ha-man ha-mordechai, asher diber tov ha-melech, ufnei b'mit ha-man gavor ha-mishim ha-man, ויאמר המלך לאור עליו. Here is the plot development of Harbona. We needed someone, we needed an advisor who's there at the very right moment, and sure enough, beyond Esther's control, this is the hidden character of the story. This is Yad Hashem. There's the perfect character. This is Harbona. But as we mentioned, how does Harbona know about this tree that was arranged only the night before? That was arranged very quickly? Harbona had a partner in crime as well. Who is Harbona's partner in crime? None other than Haman. And Chazal understands who is Haman? None other than Menucham. These are two people who are ready to promote themselves before the king by suggesting and taking advantage of the king's anger by suggesting a rash execution. Here, the tree is already hanging right now. What the two have in common, although one downplays the political and the other downplays the personal offense, they both are going to take advantage of Ahasuerus' mood by ensuring that they themselves will be promoted at the cost of someone else's life. And therefore, Chazal explained by Yomar Harbona, Amar Abelazar, Ad Harbona Rasha. Don't think Harbona is such a hero. He's also a Rasha, but to eat Hayat. Kivan Sharah Shalom is Kena, Tatol Miyad Barak. Know that he knows about the tree because he was part of the plot against Mordechai. So why does he suggest to hang Haman on the tree? Why did he tell Ahasuerus about this plot, knowing that he was a partner in crime? He is now simply trying to save himself. He is promoting himself, explains Chazal. This is no hero. This is an anti-hero. This is a protagonist who is going to play a plot together with Menucham, together with Haman. He is meant to highlight for us not only the role of Hashem in plot development, but certainly highlight the true heroes of the story. The heroes who over and over again will downplay their own personal goals, their own personal success for the sake of the nation. In the Sefer Yechezkel we find a similar idea. Va'orahu, shachin tzarech litik shevach ba'otana ala ha'ula, ve'ala ha'tut, וחותן ברוך אתה השם מקום הנקמות ומשלם במול הרעינים ומגן לצדיקים ומושיע עמו מיד חמיהם. We say the ברכה אחרה ותריבינו at the end of מגילת אסתר. And what else do we say? We mention the צדיקים. ברוך מרדכי, ברוך אסתר, ברוכים כל ישראל. רב אמר, not enough to mention the heroes, you also have to mention the protagonists, mention their foils. צריך לומר, ארור המן, וארורים בניו, his בנים, the children of Haman, which were part of his glory, part of his goal, part of his vision of success, they also fell. Amar Rabbi Pincha. Rabbi Pincha says, who else should you mention? Harbona zachor latov. Harbona is not a good character. No, he is not. He is clearly working in cohorts with the Haman, and yet zachor latov. In the end, he is remembered for good because of the role that he ultimately plays. And Tosfot says explicitly, in quoting the Yerushalmi, after saying the Megillah, mention Arur Haman Baruch Mordechai Arurah Zeresh Mitzah Esther Arurim Kol Ha'Amidim Rufim Kol Yisrael Vayarinami Yitatkem Talacha V'gam Harbona Zachor Latov. Make sure you mention him. And what he adds, if you notice, is not just Harbona Zachor Latov. According to Tosfot HaRash, one has to say, V'gam Harbona Zachor Latov.
Harmon as a character doesn't exist alone.
Harmona has a very clear role in the Megillah. His role is Vegan. He's the one who adds to the story in response to the king's Hagam Lachoshet HaMakam. He just happens to be there at the right place at the right time, which is certainly no coincidence. He is the character who is meant to enhance, on one hand, Ahasuerus's mood, and at the same time serve as a foil for our hero Mordechai. And with this, then, we turn to the last of the secondary characters, one who actually does not have a partner. One who doesn't have a partner because he doesn't even have a secondary role, or rather a tertiary role. And we're going to see how Hattach, whose name even implies his role, is going to help us understand the other characters as well. Hattach milashon tavach. He is literally the middle man. He is the person in between. And he is not only in between two characters, namely our heroes of Mordechai and Esther, but he is also literally in the middle of the Megillah. He is at the turning point. He is clearly a character who serves also a role of transition within the chiastic structure of Megillah Esther. It is Hattach who is going to serve to bridge the two parts of the story. The two parts of the story will ultimately, the role of the secondary characters will be challenged. To see whether or not the secondary characters are going to highlight the role of the primary characters, or whether or not they're going to join forces. And this we see in the middle of the Megillah, and it's very paradigmatic. When Mordechai finds out about the decree against the Yehudim, Mordechai Adad Chalasher Nassam, Vayitam Mordechai Begadad, Vayinassam Ve'ifer, Vayeti B'toch Ha'ir, Vayizat Zakat Zolam Mara, Vayavo Adonai Sham HaMelech, Ki Ein Lavo Sham HaMelech Belabusa, Mordechai, who is in mourning, appears this way in the courtyard of the king. Ovechol medina medina makom esher dvar HaMelech b'dato magia eved gadol ha'yudzim, all the Jews are in mourning, and incorporating the same terminology from Sefer Yoel, Mitzor Mokhiyam Mitzved, Sam Ve'ifer Yitzal HaRabim. Everyone is in the state of sorrow. V'tavona ma'arot Esther v'sariseha. But now Esther, in the meantime, is surrounded like a Ahasuerus by her ma'arot and by her own Pharisees. Here she seems a little more similar to a Ahasuerus. Here she seems to be serving a secondary role very similar to Vashti. V'yagidula. And they tell her about Mordechai. And the queen becomes sickened. What is it that sickens her? Batishlach begadim lahalbish et Mordechai ulhasir sakom ma'alav ulo kibel. She is sickened by her cousin's appearance. Her cousin is not appearing in his Armani suit, as he should, in the king's palace, but rather is dressed in sackcloth. Esther has basically devoted herself to the role of a secondary character, who is serving a very passive role, playing along with the king, becoming very absorbed in the materialistic, objectified way of looking at women. And yet, Mordechai will not accept this. Esther realizes at the time that there is a rift that has been created between Mordechai, who is on the outskirts of the castle, and she who is inside. Between Mordechai, who has been Haman's foil, and Esther, who has basically been serving the role until now of a secondary character. And therefore, she calls for a tertiary character. She calls for Hattach. She calls for a character who will serve as an intermediary, as someone who could perhaps communicate between herself and Mordechai, because now there are two different wavelengths. And sure enough, Hattach comes in with Sarisei HaMelech, Asher Yadmit Lepanema, Vatitzaveu Al Mordechai. And Esther, who we found at the very beginning of her position as queen, who listened to every ma'amar, who listened to everything that was commanded. She did not divulge her religious nor ethnic identity, because Mordechai tziva alaha, asher lo tomar, v'lo tagid. Mordechai had commanded upon her. But now she's going to command upon Mordechai, Lagan Mazel Yam Mazel.
ויצא הכף המרדכי אל רחוב העיר אשר לפני שער המלך, ויגד לו מרדכי את כל אשר קראו, ופשט הכסף אשר אמר המן לשאול את בתי המלך ביהודים לעבדם. Here we find that Mordechai would have to explain through Hakach the dire situation. Ve'et hachem et kabadat hashem itan shushan hashem idan nathan ola arot of Esther. Apparently Esther doesn't know about this letter that has been sent down. Ula gibla ula tabo kala. This reminds me of the scene between Abraham and Ephraim HaFitim. Each was communicating on a different wavelength. Shma'uni, no, Shma'uni, you listen to me. Right, who's on first and what's on second? And here, sure enough, God, Mordechai and Esther are going to have a lack of communication. Wearing himself out of it all, Vatomer Esther Lahatach, Vatitzaveh on Mordechai, it's not over yet, she's going to be commanding Mordechai, Kola ben Melech, Vah Matinat Melech, Yodim et Kodesh Vishah, Asher Yavo, Olam Melech, Olam Hatzer Apnimim, Asher Lo Yikarei Hatzat Olamit, Levan Masher Yoshim Olam Melech, Asher Bit Tzahav, Vachayna, Vah Nino Yikrit Lav Olam Melech, Nashul Shem Yom, I can't Mordechai. I have not been commanded, as opposed to Vashti, I have not been commanded to appear before the king, and if I do, that's when I will be killed. Vayagidu l'Mordechai is a great Esther. And finally, Mordechai on one hand understands the dire situation that he's placing Esther in. The danger that he's imposing upon her will now use the term, the verb, l'hashiv on Esther. Respond to Esther, also the name of Shech, the Yimalech Mitamalech Mitol Hayyudi. You have a choice right now. You can be silent. You can decide to play the role of a secondary character. You can decide to not anticipate Ahasuerus' response. You can decide to put your personal concerns above the national ones, as Vashti did, as Zeresh did, as Nebuchadnezzar, and soon to be Haran. Or, כי המחרי שחרי שיבית הזאת, רווח בהצלה יעלור יוצא במקום אחר, that's okay. Someone else will play your role. Perhaps it will even be the Jews of Eretz Israel, while we are all destroyed. ואת עובדת אביב תובדו. Do not think that you will save yourself. Realize that if you put your personal goals, if you put your selfish concerns before the nation, then ultimately, you really will die out. ומי יודע אם נגיד כזאת תיבת המחות? Don't you understand that maybe you're placed here because you have a specific role? And all the other characters in Megillat Esther use their personal positions, use their positions in the court for their selfish reasons. Are you going to be a character like that, Esther? That's all there, Esther, the Hashim Amorchan. Atach Kutpanam. We don't need a tertiary character, because there is no secondary character. Lechnos et kol ha-yehudim ha-nipsanim v'shushan, v'tzum ha-omayim, v'yal tochum, v'yal tishnu shlosha yamim ha-layla v'yom, gam ani v'narot ha-yam shukim, v'chein ha-bor ha-malach asher lo kadat, et asher abadati, abadati. V'yavor ha-mordchai, v'makbim v'tzukim, v'yal v'chol asher, tzitkan, Allah Esther. Now he's okay with it. Esther can tell him and commands upon Mordechai whatever he wants. There is clearly a role reversal, not only between Esther and Mordechai, but within Esther herself. She can command upon Mordechai not that he change his clothing, not that he become concerned with his self-image. She can command upon Mordechai, and Mordechai would be more than willing to listen when she places national concerns before her personal ones. And what we see clearly then is that all the secondary characters, in addition to playing a role of class development, are clearly here to highlight the role of the primary characters of Mordechai and Esther. What they all have in common is that they advance themselves selfishly and always at another's expense. Nebuchadnezzar at Vashti's expense, Zeresh at Mordechai's, Bigtan and Zeresh at Ahasuerus's, Chabona at Haman's expense. as opposed to over and under again Mordechai and Esther. They risk their lives for the sake of the nation. V'dateihem shonot, exclaimed Haman to Ahasuerus. You may as well execute these people. Kill them. Their workers, v'dateihem shonot. Their religion is different. How true both Zeresh and Haman's words really are. Yes, Mordechai and Esther represent a different religion, different values, different ethics, different levels of nemanut, of being faithful. They are more devoted to God than any other nation. And the secondary characters who are their foils highlight what true character and what true values are. The secondary characters will help us then understand the national, historical, and I'll even go so far as to say supernatural involvement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On a final note, I always wonder if Chazal tell us that some of the Gibborim of Tanakh only known that their words would have been recorded, then they would have gone out to ensure that they would have gone to the Mishuratatim even more than they were described. Looking at Rambam and Harbanah, at Zeresh and Vashti, and certainly at Mitzan and Zeresh, I wonder year after year whether they knew that even the secondary characters, Jews worldwide, would hear about their plots, would hear about their stories, and would not only concern themselves with their roles, but how they highlight the primary characters. I wonder if had they known that, would they have acted any differently? Did they know how with their small refusals, their small comments, their plots here and there, they would not only allow for the survival of the Jewish nation, but for the promotion of these messages and values? Would they have chosen to act any differently? And I can't help but wonder that the secondary characters who placed their selfish motives first, how much their actions were recorded. Certainly, Kal v'chomer, we should appreciate how even insignificant acts can certainly lead to tremendous historical impact upon one another and certainly upon the whole nation. We only paid attention then to the role that we played in Jewish history. Perhaps we would realize that in fact we could write history. Therefore, I conclude with one of my famous remarks of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. But I think we also see that in Megillat Esther, is that the secondary roles are not really any less significant than the primary ones, but they serve to highlight them. They serve to teach us that we have a choice. We have a choice, and that we can either read history, we can laugh at history, or we can decide to play a role together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and write history. Thank you for coming.